Good evening. I'm Victoria Thorpe, sitting in for Lauren Meltzer and Joseph Pace, and welcome to City Visions Radio. Our topic tonight is Hazy Future, New Opportunities and Conflicts for Marijuana Legalization in California. In 1996, California voters passed Proposition 215, which removed criminal penalties for the use of marijuana by people with chronic medical conditions. Since then, 17 other states have joined California in decriminalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes. This past November, voters in Colorado and Washington passed laws that allow any adult to possess and use marijuana regardless of medical need. With over 50% of Americans believing marijuana should be legal, according to a poll from May 2012, the movement to change state laws regarding marijuana use is gaining momentum rapidly. At a federal level, however, marijuana is still considered illegal for any purpose, and the Department of Justice has proven its hard line on this issue recently by trying to shut down Harborside Health Center in Oakland and arresting a prominent distributor of marijuana in Stockton just last week. Tonight we're going to explore the conflicts between state and federal laws regarding marijuana use and discuss the future of the legalization movement in California in light of the recent victories in Colorado and Washington. And we have three guests this evening that all have a Bay Area focus, and they all live in the Bay Area and work in the Bay Area, but they have a statewide view on this whole question of marijuana legalization in California. Joining me in the studio is Dale Gehringer, who is the director of California Normal, which stands for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Dale has been the state coordinator of Cal Normal since 1987. He is a member of the Normal National Board of Directors, director of the California Drug Policy Forum, and treasurer of the Oakland Civil Liberties Alliance. Dale has published research on medical marijuana usage and safety and was one of the original co-authors of Prop 215 and a proponent of Oakland's Measure Z cannabis initiative in 2004. Welcome, Dale.
Good to be here.
And joining me by phone are Dr. Robert McCoon, who is a professor of public policy, a professor of law, and a professor of law at UC Berkeley. Dr. McCoon, who is a psychologist, joined the faculty of UC Berkeley's School of Public Policy in 1993, and the Bolt Law School faculty in 1999. Dr. McCoon has published many studies on illicit drug use and drug dealing, harm reduction, jury decision-making, and bias in the use and interpretation of research evidence. Dr. McCoon is the co-author of Drug War Heresies, Learning from Other Vices, Times, and Places, published by Cambridge University Press in 2001. Welcome, Dr. McCoon.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And I have Dr. Bo Kilmer on the phone, too, who is a senior policy researcher at the RAND Corporation. Dr. Kilmer co-directs the RAND Drug Policy Research Center and is also a professor at the Pardee RAND Graduate School. Dr. Kilmer's research lies at the intersection of public health and public safety, with a special emphasis on substance use, illicit markets, and public policy. Dr. Kilmer's new book on marijuana legalization was published by Oxford University Press. He is regularly interviewed in the media, most recently by Al Jazeera, All Things Considered, CNN, and the New York Times. Welcome, Dr. Kilmer.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you all for being part of City Visions Radio tonight. At about 20 minutes after the hour, we will start taking calls from our listeners at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or send us a message on our Facebook page. So we're going to delve into a lot of topics tonight, but before we get into the meat of all these different laws and how they conflict and work with each other, I want to just get one thing out of the way, and that's a nomenclature question. And doing all my research for the show, I came upon groups that talk about cannabis and groups that talk about marijuana, and I know that there's weighted feelings about both of those terms, but just for our listeners, I want to just clarify how we should be describing this substance and what we as we talk about it tonight. And I'm going to just ask maybe Dr. Kilmer to weigh in on, give us some guidance about which word we should be using tonight.
Well, in general, most people refer to it as marijuana in the States, but when you go to Europe, they usually refer to it as cannabis. Actually, Dale knows much more about the biology of the plant, and so maybe he'd be better to speak to this.
Great. Okay, Dale, could you answer that question for us?
Cannabis refers to the plant in all its uses, which includes hemp, for example. Marijuana generally refers to it exclusively as use for intoxicant. We are the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and marijuana laws is what we have on the books in the U.S. and in California and other states. Once those laws are abolished, maybe we'll have cannabis laws.
Okay, that's helpful to know. Dr. McCoon, any other thoughts on that?
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Okay, all right. I just didn't want anyone calling up and saying, why aren't you calling it cannabis? So we're going to call it marijuana for our conversation tonight. I want to start by just helping our listeners understand the current landscape of the laws governing marijuana use in California. So I know we have Prop 215, and that was amended, and we've had some movement to have different ways of making things legal in the state. And so I would like maybe Dr. Kilmer, or one of you can tell me which is the best. I was thinking Dr. Kilmer might be the best to start here and just lay out for our listeners what is legal in California. What are you allowed to do under state law in terms of marijuana use? And I know we really only have it for medicinal purposes in California.
Yeah, Dale was, you know, one of the co-writers for Prop 215, which legalized marijuana to be used for medicinal purposes in the state. Right now, it is illegal to possess marijuana for non-medical purposes under state law and under federal law. But with the passage of the Leno bill that went into effect in January 1st of 2011, it made possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana, it made it an infraction, whereas before it was a misdemeanor. So I believe right now it's an infraction with a $100 fine. Is that correct, Dale?
Yes, although in practice the fine ends up being $500 when they add all the court fees.
Hmm. And so that was a new law that was just passed a year ago. About a year ago, 2 years ago? Okay.
Yes. Schwarzenegger signed that one in the office before he
So right now it's legal to possess a very small amount, but do you have to prove that you have a medicinal purpose for it?
I could weigh in here. This is Rob McCoon. If you have a permit for medical marijuana, it's legal under California state law. The possession law that Bo Kilmer was just describing does not legalize possession. It simply eliminates any penalty but a fine. And although this is a pretty nuanced use of language, it makes a difference because you can still be arrested for marijuana possession, and it is not legalized sales for recreational use. So what we're going to talk about tonight is really not about legalizing possession so much as legalizing sales, and that's really the more profound legal change, I think.
Okay. Dale, do you want to help us clarify anything else here, or just where the sales part of it? So if you're allowed to possess it and you can't sell it, where are you supposed to get it from?
You can't legally except under the medical marijuana law. We have provision for marijuana collectives that are allowed to distribute and sell for medical patients. And that's a very vague law. There's a lot of ambiguities in it. The meaning is disputed. But the fact is we do have hundreds, in fact, over 1,000 medical cannabis dispensaries here in the state of California selling cannabis for medical purposes for people who have recommendations under Proposition 215. Otherwise, sales are illegal.
Okay. So you are allowed to sell it under that particular provision, but it's decriminalized, not legal. That's a nuance of the law.
It's legal under state law as far as I'm concerned. It's just illegal under federal law.
Okay, that's the next thing we're going to get into. Okay, so anything else there we're missing in terms of helping people understand what exactly we're allowed to do and not? Okay, so let's talk about this whole conflict with federal law, because that seems to be incredibly big issue right now in the state. We've had locally the story with Harborside Health Center in Oakland that that the federal Department of Justice has been trying to get shut down and using various methods, eviction and whatnot. And there was just on Friday a distributor in Stockton, I believe, who was arrested and asked to basically confess, and from what I understand. After he had purportedly followed all the state laws around distributing marijuana for medicinal purposes. So maybe we could just start by, and I'll let either any of you jump in who wants to answer this one, maybe just helping people understand there's several different agencies, federal agencies, that can get involved with this, right? We've got the Department of Justice, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and are there others? I mean, how do these different agencies get involved in the oversight? What's the part they play?
IRS is also involved because they've been looking at the taxes of some of these places. Customs gets involved if you're at the border. Immigration has been involved in it. Department of Treasury's been involved in trying to prevent banks from giving bank accounts to businesses that deal in medical cannabis. Practically every federal agency has some sort of regulations involving drugs written into it that somehow include marijuana one way or another.
Yeah, but at the heart of all of this is the Controlled Substance Act, which states that marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance, meaning that it has no legitimate medical use. And so the federal-state conflict really comes down to a now fairly old federal law that conflicts with what the states are trying to do. And a choice that the federal government faces and the Obama administration faces about how aggressively to try to reconcile that by forcing the states to comply with federal law. And that's the big question, is what they will do. You know, we're in a different era already because President Obama got reelected. And it is true there have been federal crackdowns, but I was of the opinion and stated in various interviews during the first Obama administration that we were going to see them cracking down more and more, just to protect themselves on the issue before election. But I think now that he's reelected, we're going to see less zeal. I would expect that we're going to see less enthusiasm. It's not an issue that's very important to him. He doesn't have any strong passions about enforcing the federal law, and he's already stated that he doesn't view it as a high priority. We'll see. The federal government has lots of different players with lots of different opinions, but I think we might be in a new era, at least for the next 4 years.
It's interesting you should say that, because that's what I had read, too, is that I think the quote was that Obama said something like, we have bigger fish to fry, or, you know, we're not going to waste our precious resources on going after marijuana. We've got bigger drug issues to worry about. But yet, you can point to a lot of cases, especially just, you know, Matthew Davis just last week, where it seems to be a very hard line, and now we're in, you know, a second term of the administration. So, I don't know, does anyone else want to weigh in on thoughts about where they think the Obama administration will go in terms of federal involvement in state laws here?
Well, Victoria, I want to make two points. It's important to note that while President Obama made that statement to Barbara Walters about, well, we've got bigger fish to fry, he was specifically talking about marijuana users. He did not make a statement about what he thinks the federal response should be with respect to those who are producing and selling. And that's important. We're all kind of waiting to see, you know, not only in Colorado and Washington, but these federal actions are going to send signals to other states. And, you know, in kind of following up on a comment that Rob McCoo made, it's that, you know, all the, you know, under federal law, all the medical marijuana statutes and all of those who are producing and using medical marijuana are, you know, are breaking the law. But these different agencies that we talked about, the IRS, the U.S. attorneys, the DEA, they have a tremendous amount of discretion. That's why sometimes they go after certain dispensaries and not others. And, you know, they've got limited resources, and so in some cases, and sometimes they just have to prioritize. So it'll be really interesting to see how these federal agencies respond to legal marijuana in Colorado and Washington, given that these agencies do have limited budgets and a fair amount of discretion.
I think that point you made about the difference between users and distributors is a big one, because I think that's where some of the interest seems to be at the Department of Justice level, from what we can see in the cases that have been pursued recently. Any other thoughts, Dale or Rob, Dr. McCoon, about that?
Well, just one thing I would mention is it's not just federal officials. In California, it's clear that there are regional differences at the state and county, within the state, between different county law enforcement officials and prosecutors. And in particular, L.A. County, at a local level, officials have been very adamant about cracking down on medical marijuana. The attitude is quite different up here in the Bay Area. So local officials are going to play a role in this too, and if they actually ask the federal government for help, it's very hard for the federal government to ignore that. I don't think Colorado is going to be asking the federal government for help from the signals we're seeing, or Washington, but in California, there are local officials who want to get tough. So.
Well, we're going to turn to the laws in California and Washington next. I just thought we might clarify one other thing, and maybe, Dale, you can help people understand this, that my understanding is in California that some of the details of how medical marijuana is allowed to be distributed is different county by county. Is that correct, that it isn't a consistent law across the state?
Right. There aren't any really uniform statewide regulations on this. San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, a lot of other cities have their own regulatory systems, which have been fairly successful, and which, ironically, though it's the regulated dispensaries, some of the best regulated dispensaries have been the target of the U.S. attorneys here. There are a lot of other places which have no regulations at all, where it's pretty wild west, and the feds have not gone into those locations, interestingly enough, nor have they gone into L.A., which is utter chaos. So the federal policy is hard to jive with what's going on locally. But yes, there are lots of different local regimes throughout the state.
And maybe that would lead to the difference in how law enforcement addresses it, too, because things are not necessarily completely consistent. Well, let's look at Colorado and Washington next, because I think it's really interesting what those two states passed, and their laws are quite different. In Colorado, I'm going to give my explanations. Maybe one of you, instead of my layman explanation, would maybe Dale or Bo like to, Dr. Kilmer, like to explain what these two laws, what these two voter propositions did in Colorado and Washington in terms of decriminalizing marijuana for both medicinal, where they already have medicinal laws, but for recreational use. And just to clarify, both these voter initiatives passed by a wide margin. So would either one of you like to just give a quick explanation of the two laws and what's different about them?
Sure, I can speak to it for a few moments, and then if I forget anything, Dale can correct me.
That's great.
But, I mean, essentially what happened in Colorado and Washington State on November 6th was truly unprecedented. I mean, no modern jurisdiction has ever removed the prohibition on commercial production, distribution, and possession of marijuana for non-medical purposes. Not even the Netherlands. I mean, a lot of people think it's legal there, but production is still illegal. So, I mean, what's happened now is in both of these states, if you are an adult over the age of 21, at this point, it's legal for you to possess up to 1 ounce. If you live in Colorado, you're also able to grow up to 6 plants, and you're able to give away 1 ounce to another adult. Washington, it's a little different. Washington, it's still illegal to grow at home. But what's actually happening right now in both of these states is that you have different state agencies. In Colorado, it's the Department of Revenue, and there's also a working committee there. And in Washington State, it's the State Liquor Control Board. They're now working on developing regulatory regimes, which will regulate the private businesses that come in, you know, deciding what will be produced, how much will be produced. And so those are the policies that are going to be kind of created over the next year. So you can't just walk into a store right now and buy a joint. But depending on how the federal government responds, that could actually be the case within a year.
It's fascinating, isn't it? So I guess, Dale, I'll ask you the next question. Do you see either or both of these laws a viable model for how California's legalization could move forward?
Yeah, I do. I like the Colorado law, to tell you the truth, because it does allow for personal use cultivation and distribution amongst individuals and friends. I fear that there is a high probability, close to certainty, that the federal government is going to act to block those state regulated and licensed stores that they are going to be setting up in Colorado, in Washington. But in both cases, in order to legally sell, you have to be licensed by the state. In Washington, the state is sort of doing it directly itself. In Colorado, it's more indirect, but there's still a licensing that has to be done. And there are no licenses available yet and won't be for some months. When those start getting issued, I would not be at all surprised to see the federal government act. And depending on how they act, and then depending on how the courts decide on that, I think that will determine the shape of what we want to pursue here in California thereafter.
Okay. And that's what I want to actually ask you all to weigh in about. And I know it's all conjecture right now because no one really knows how these things are going to play out. But certainly what I've read is that the federal government's already kind of working to create some kind of strategy for responding to these laws and is not, you know, signaling so far that it's going to take a laissez-faire approach. So I guess maybe, Dr. McCoon, you could start by giving us your sense of what do you think the federal response will be and how, from a legal point of view, what recourse do they have here?
Well, they the federal government, first of all, the states, these two states have, there's a tension here because they have the tantalizing prospect of this massive new revenue mm-hmm. source, and then particularly in Washington, they really are expecting. They really are already counting on lots of revenue. But to get the revenue, you really need this full retail model, and the full retail model is just what's going to push buttons in Washington. And frankly, if these two states started slow and tried to fly under the radar screen a bit more, I think they would probably better resist federal pressure. And, for example, Dale mentioned home cultivation. I think, starting with the home cultivation is relatively low risk from a legal standpoint and lower profile. I think buyers' collectives are lower profile. But when you start talking about retail outlets, then that's really going to raise concerns in Washington. In terms of how the federal government responds, no one's really sure yet. They can arrest people in the states. They can arrest users in the states and let the users fight the arrests. And so that would certainly be one approach. Usually the federal arrests are more likely to be for trafficking and not for possession, but if they just wanted to press the issue, they could make arrests there. They can certainly have enforcement against the sellers, and that will force a legal issue, and you can imagine this going to the courts. They could directly take legal action to try to block the states from implementing this with a lawsuit. So they have lots of different ways they could approach it. But for them, it's politically in the White House, it's kind of a no-win situation because somebody's going to be unhappy no matter what they do. The White House will not get a lot of credit for anything they do, but they can make a lot of people angry no matter what they do. And mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're really agonizing about this.
That's what the analysis seemed to say that I read. I'm just going to take a minute to just let everyone know that we're listening to City Visions Radio on local public radio, KALW, San Francisco, 91.7. And tonight we're discussing new opportunities and conflicts for marijuana legalization in California with our guests. We have Dr. Robert McCoon, Director of Law and Professor, of Law and Public Policy at UC Berkeley, Dr. Bo Kilmer, who's the Director of Drug Policy at the RAND Institute, and Dale Gehringer, who's the Director of CalNormal. And now I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions or comments about the legalization of marijuana in California. The number to call join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post messages on our Facebook page by going to Facebook and searching for City Visions Radio. I just wanted to also just come back to that question about revenue, and maybe, Dale, you wanted to weigh on this. I know that what I read is that the Washington Initiative 502, they estimate could bring on up to $200 million a year. Is that possibly correct?
I think that's quite realistic. The state of California took in $100 million in sales tax off of medical marijuana only, a fairly low tax, actually, on a limited product. I think that $200 million is realistic if the federal government lets Washington take that money, and there are laws that could allow the federal government to confiscate that money.
Does anyone else have a thought on? I know, and you know, it seems like in all these tough economic times, that revenue feels like a big driving force in getting policies passed. And it seems like that was an argument that was used in Colorado and Washington. I don't know if Dr. McCoon or Dr. Kilmer, if either one of you want to weigh in on this revenue argument, and you know whether you think it would hold water.
Bo, you want to take that?
Yeah, it's a. I mean, the ultimate revenue that's going to come in is going to depend on what type of tax is applied, and then also what ends up happening to the production costs. I mean, you know, as we talked about before, these different state agencies in Colorado and Washington, they're making these difficult choices right now about, you know, what type of production to allow. Do we allow, you know, big companies to come in, and do we allow marijuana to be farmed like any other agricultural product? Or do we only allow a few kind of select producers who can only grow indoors? The decisions that these different agencies make about production, that's really going to shape what happens to the production costs. And if you did see a large reduction in the production costs, you could imagine that kind of leading to a reduction in other costs as well. And so the argument is, well, can we put a tax on it to kind of offset some of this price drop? And it really depends. I mean, if you tax it too high, you do have to worry about a black market. But one of the issues that doesn't get enough attention is how it's actually taxed. And, you know, sometimes people talk about taxing based on value. Others talk about taxing it based on the weight, you know, $50 an ounce or $25 an ounce. The different taxes that are applied could have very different effects on what happens to the market. If you apply a tax that's only based on the total weight, it creates incentives to sell more potent marijuana. On the other hand, when we talk about that, we're typically talking about THC. But one could also imagine developing taxes, you know, as a function of the amount of THC that's actually in the marijuana, where THC is the intoxicating ingredient, or is the main intoxicant in cannabinoid in marijuana. So one could, you know, just as if, you know, we have different taxes on beer, different taxes on wine, different taxes on hard alcohol, one could imagine a state where you tax differently based on the amount of THC, or maybe based on some of the other cannabinoids. For example, there's CBD is getting a lot of attention. So one could imagine a scenario where you tax based on the THC to CBD ratios. And so these are some of the questions that, you know, these different, you know, not only in Colorado and Washington, but other states that are thinking about this, these are the things they need to grapple with. And so this will not only end up having an impact on kind of the revenues that come in, but it can also have a revenue or have potential implications on some of the public health effects of legalization.
It's very nuanced, isn't it? It seems really complicated once you get into all these detailed questions, and then the question being, of course, what will be actually able to go through once the federal government starts digging into this. I'm going to get to some more callers from our listeners. We've got a lot of people who are calling in. I've got Rose calling, and she is interested in the environmental impact of marijuana growth. Rose, do we have Rose on the line?
Yep.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for calling City Visions. Would you like to ask your question?
Thank you. I own land in southern Humboldt, northern Mendocino, and previously there were mom-pop grows up there, which were in harmony with the earth. Now there are these people coming in, growing 1,000 plants, huge greenhouses, destroying the environment. I wanted to know what the guests feel is the future of these people and this out-of-balance way of dealing with growing in the earth.
Jill, do you want to take that question?
Yeah, when it's legal, people are not going to be growing thousands of plants out in the national forests anymore. They're probably going to be growing it in the Central Valley, frankly, which has a really good climate for...
Agreed. Yeah.
So all of these problems we have now are typical problems of an illegal market, a prohibition market. But they are not what I think we can get rid of. The only way to get rid of them, is to eventually legalize marijuana, not only in California, but in the United States, because a lot of the marijuana from California is exported from the state.
Great.
Anyone else want to weigh in on that one?
I would just add that I agree with the listener that I think the economics of legalization are such that the small growing operations are just not going to survive, at least not as commercial entities. Of course, there's a different way of looking at this, which is if you legalize home cultivation without legalizing retail market structure, then you're going to still have, in fact, you probably see even more small local growing operations. But if it's full retail legalization, it's going to be an entirely different industry than what we're seeing right now. You know, for better or worse, the economics are such that it's going to be, a big agricultural enterprise.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. I'm going to go to Rick now. I've got Rick on the line. Is Rick ready?
Hello.
Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling City Visions Radio. And can you ask, what's your question?
Thank you. With all this talk of the so-called fiscal cliff, why don't we defund the DEA portion of going after marijuana and apply the funds to other programs, for example, social programs? You know, we've wasted so much money on the so-called war on drugs. And how about all of us harassing or nagging our senators and representatives to do so?
There was actually a bill in Congress last year, the so-called Rohrabacher-Hinchey Amendment, that would have denied funding to the Department of Justice for going after medical marijuana in specific in California. That bill did get, a respectable minority of votes, most of the Democrats and a few Republicans, but nothing's going to happen in Congress in the next 2 years under the current highly conservative law and order leadership that exists in the House of Representatives.
Who brought it up?
The bill was brought up actually by a Republican from California, Dana Rohrabacher from Orange County, and a congressman from New York, Maurice Hinchey.
And there's also another bill that's been introduced by a Democrat from Colorado, Diana DeJet, I think is her name, which would state that the Controlled Substance Act would not, under the Controlled Substance Act, federal law shall not preempt state law. I don't think this is going to go far in Congress either. But it is interesting, just the mere fact that these bills are appearing in the House of Representatives is itself politically, I think, significant, because bills like this just did not appear in the House of Representatives a decade ago.
It's interesting bellwether for where policy may go in this whole this whole arena. And one thing I kept reading about and doing the research for the show is that, you know, the viewpoints on marijuana seem to be a very age-specific thing. Below a certain age, that it seems like Americans are just sort of not particularly worried about it. And maybe that's part of what we're going to see over time. I don't know if anyone has an opinion about that, but as sort of the next generation of people gets into elected office, that will continue to have a really big influence on policies regarding marijuana legalization.
I mean, there has been...
Maybe we can find out how we keep bugging our representatives. There's always something new appearing year to year.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Dr. Kilmore, you interrupted a little bit there. What were you saying?
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, the public opinion on this has been changing quite a bit. I mean, 20 years ago, only about 20% of Americans supported the legalization of the use of marijuana. You know, 10 years after that, it was at 35%, and now we're close to 50%, depending on the poll. But you're right about the demographics, and I think in one of the Gallup polls, I think from 2011, when they actually broke it down by age, if you looked at those who are aged 18 to 29, about 62% of them supported legalizing the use of marijuana, where if you looked at those who are 65 and older, it was only 31%.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think an important part of the story is the degree of opposition is much more passionate among older birth cohorts that are now in their 70s and 80s are quite vehemently opposed. I mean, just to be candid here, as those birth cohorts are dying off, we're seeing a change in the age composition where more and more birth cohorts of adults come from cohorts where maybe half of their peers tried marijuana at some point. And in these groups, it's not necessarily, not everyone supports marijuana legalization, but the opposition, among people who are opposed, the opposition is just much softer. Younger cohorts find it harder to get worked up about the issue, I think.
That's interesting. So it's not just the number of people who support it, it's the number of people who aren't willing to go to the mat to oppose it.
Yeah, and we saw that in Colorado and Washington, and even to some extent in California. Just how tepid the opposition efforts really were, how little money was raised, how few people got involved.
Okay.
It's just people are not as worked up about this issue as they were, 20 years ago.
Okay. I would like to go to another one of our callers. I have an interesting question, I think, from Martin about secondhand marijuana smoke. Is Martin there?
Yes.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for calling City Visions Radio.
Well, I'm in favor of decriminalizing that. I don't want people shooting each other, or even me, over drugs or marijuana. But I don't want to go down Market Street and breathe it. And I don't want to have I don't want to have secondhand marijuana smell or breathing. Or if I live in the apartment above somebody, I don't want my baby breathing it. So the question is whether smoking versus taking marijuana as an intoxicant. And then the other question is it an intoxicant if the person is driving, just like alcohol, has a limit?
Okay, thank you for your call. I see Dell wants to answer that question.
Marijuana smoke is not nearly as dangerous as tobacco smoke is. There's never been any study showing any harm caused by secondhand marijuana smoking. And in fact, the best studies that have been done indicate that even firsthand marijuana smoking does not cause lung cancer the way firsthand smoking of tobacco does. In fact, it appears to even have possibly some anti-carcinogenic effects in the data that they've turned up. So marijuana smoke is just, down at the level. It's certainly below the smoke that would be coming off of a charcoal grill in proved harmfulness. As for odors, well, there are all sorts of odors around. You go out in the country and, pit, hog farms and everything else. Where we live, we've got laurel trees. My neighbor's allergic to the laurel trees, but we learn to adjust. So, you know, I think we need common sense ventilation rules to...
I'm talking about Market Street or a building when I'm going into a building or...
Well, again, I think we need to have ventilation rules and access rules for those things, the way we do for other substances. But it's not nearly as dangerous as tobacco smoke. And there's other ways of taking marijuana. There's also this whole system known as vaporization, which doesn't produce smoke. It just sort of heats the marijuana, and you get this vapor. And you wouldn't even notice if somebody were vaporizing in the room next to you, or even in the same elevator as yourself.
Right.
So that's...
And then the driving.
Well, I actually wanted to get to the driving thing, but I wanted to just say one quick thing, and maybe this whole question of the smoke inhalation and smoke of, you know, being on the streets would be regulated at some point if, you know, the same way that tobacco use is. You're not allowed to just smoke everywhere you go. But this driving one, I think, is interesting because which state was it? Was it Washington? I think Washington's initiative is on hold officially until they can come up with like a DUI-type law regarding driving under the influence of marijuana. Am I correct with that? One of the two states was sort of...
Well, they actually set a new standard in Washington, a controversial one. You know, there's been a lot of buzz about marijuana and driving. There's also been a lot of studies done on it, and they all are coming to the conclusion that marijuana does not really have a very significant effect on overall driving fatalities. It's clearly safer than alcohol on the road. Some studies have found that people who have, you know, who are just like light users of marijuana or will show lower accident rates than you might otherwise expect, perhaps because they drive more cautiously. And then if they take too much marijuana, it becomes dangerous. And a strong dose of marijuana is as dangerous as drunken driving. But the highway safety data that comes in shows that states that have liberal marijuana laws, like California, actually also have very good highway safety records. California is one of the some of the safest roads in the nation,
right,
despite our laws on this. The Netherlands has the safest driving highway safety record in all of Europe.
I mean, you have to be careful correlating those two things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of maybe other factors at play there.
These statistics are really enormously difficult to sort out because you know, the correlational field studies have this problem of, you know, they test people's blood, especially in the fatality cases, and you can detect marijuana many days after someone's had it. And also many of the cases where they find marijuana, the person's also been using alcohol. In the driving simulation kinds of studies, they find these kind of, I mean, it's kind of funny, there are these offsetting effects. Marijuana does impair your judgment to some extent when you're driving, but people tend to drive slower too, and those two effects seem to offset each other. I don't know if you remember the late comedian Pat Paulson, who's actually from the Bay Area, but I once asked him when he was running, he had this gag campaign where he was running for president, and I asked him his opinion about marijuana legalization, and he said he was against it, and I asked him why, and he said, I don't want people driving on the freeway at 40 miles an hour.
So perhaps a different set of issues than driving under the influence of alcohol. I'm going to just take a minute here just to let us everyone know that we're listening to City Visions Radio on KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing new opportunities and conflicts for marijuana legalization in California with our guests. We have Dr. Robert McCoon, who's a professor of law and public policy at UC Berkeley, Dr. Beau Kilmer, who's the director of drug policy at the RAND Institute, and Dale Gerringer, who's the director of Cal Normal. We'd like to hear from you, our listeners, with any questions or comments about the legalization of marijuana in California. The number to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. 4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post messages on our Facebook page by going to Facebook and searching for City Visions Radio. So we have another caller who's been waiting to ask his question. Do we have Mark still on the line?
Yes.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling City Visions Radio. What was your question?
Yes, thank you very much for the great show. I just wanted to say that, I do have a question, but I wanted to say that, as I understand it, the word marijuana was sort of promoted during the 30s when, you know, when all that crazy government stuff was coming out, reefer madness and everything, because it was called cannabis here, and it was, you know, routinely available at, like, herbal stores and apothecaries and stuff, but they decided to brand it as the, you know, invasion from Mexico with the sort of racist thing, and it was all part of the attempt to slur it. And ever since I learned that, I haven't really liked the word that much. I like the herbal word, cannabis. But anyhow, the question I have is that has there been any studies on what would happen to the budgets of, like, the prison system and the Justice Department and the courts, particularly with the outrageous forfeiture laws that are on the books now, some of the most outrageous stories I've ever heard. I just wonder if there's been any analysis about what's going to happen if this trend continues toward legalization. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. So the question is about the financial impact of decriminalization of and legalization of marijuana. It sounds like he's asking across the board, like they did in Colorado and Washington, if that would have an impact on the cost of, in the courts, of not trying and prosecuting marijuana-related crimes in California. Anybody have an opinion on that? Maybe, I don't know.
Bo and I worked on a study in which we actually tried to estimate this. Bo, you want to speak to that?
But actually, all three, because Dale did one.
That's right, Dale, you did a study too.
Well, all three of you can weigh in. I love it. Great.
Yeah, so we began looking into this in 2010, kind of during the debate about Proposition 19, and we were trying to look at, well, what are the criminal justice costs associated with prohibiting marijuana in California? And when we kind of did the literature review, two studies came up. One study suggested that it costs California about $200 million a year to enforce the laws. That would include arrest and incarceration. There was another study out there that put it closer to $2 billion a year. A big difference. And the figure, the $200 million figure, that came from Dale and Cal Normal. And so we use more recent, data about what we know about arrests and how many people are actually incarcerated in prison. And in prison, California prisons right now, there are probably 1,400 people that may be in there for a marijuana charge alone.
And Dr. Kilmer, just to give us some perspective, that's out of how many prisoners in California?
Oh, there are, on any given day, there are, that's a good question, there are 80,000 people in jail on any given day.
I think it's 130,000 or so in the state prisons.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's a very small amount. But
so 1,400 out of roughly, let's just say, 100 plus 1,000.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, though, I mean, there are people that do spend time in jail. And it's really hard, you know, even if it's just, you know, they're arrested, you know, the night before.
Yeah, versus prison. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, but things have changed now over the past couple of years because of the Lena law. So it would depend on how much you were actually possessing at the time. But, you know, when we looked at this, you know, our estimates were much closer to what Dale had estimated, you know, closer to $200, $300 million a year. That is a fair amount of money, but it's not the billions of dollars that you hear, so...
And one thing I would just add, just because I want to speak to the listener's question, I don't think anyone seriously contends that the government would lose money somehow. I've heard claims that somehow that, you know, a lot of people have this financial incentive to keep marijuana illegal. I've looked into that a bit, and I just don't see really any truth to that. I think, you know, it's mostly going to be savings of money.
And do you mean that the financial incentive would be for collecting fines and whatnot?
So it is true that there are asset seizures, okay, and there's some that get a lot of publicity. It is for marijuana possession. It is not a huge
source of revenue for any law enforcement agency.
And Dale, I know you've done some research on this. Maybe you can weigh in, too.
Well, the one exception to that is it's a big chunk of the DEA budget and the Bureau of Narcotics Enforcement budgets, significant enough that they are the major lobbies against reforming the laws that we encounter in Sacramento and in Washington as well. But those are sort of small, limited bureaucracies.
All right, I wanted just to turn to some of the, we've started, touched a little bit on some of the safety issues in, regarding marijuana when we talked about driving. But, we got an email from a listener earlier in the show talking about a friend of hers who apparently had cancer. And I'm going back here. She said, "I'm convinced that marijuana shrinks tumors in conjunction with chemo saved my friend's life." And in this room is a doctor, so I'm not going to ask anyone to actually, delve into the medical viability of that comment, but I think that's the side of you hear from a medical side point of view about the palliative effects of marijuana use. I've also read some interesting studies showing, particularly out of Great Britain, some noticeable impacts they've seen in IQ with youth who use marijuana regularly under 18. And I just wondered, as we think about the expansion of legalization of marijuana, it would theoretically increase access. And, maybe, Dale, you could talk about from the legalization advocacy point of view, what are the ways that you see being able to keep usage safe and, not make it something that young people have further access to and educating people about the safe use of it, the same way people need to be educated about the safe use of any, controlled substance?
I think a lot of that education has, to some extent, happened culturally over the last generation. I think this America in 2013 has a lot better grip on how to deal with marijuana than it did in 1973, 1974. I don't actually think there would be any perceptible major public health changes if marijuana were legal, and even if it were turned out to be widely used, more widely than we expected, I just don't think that there's any, there's been a lot of studies of marijuana and health, and they don't seem to show any substantial long-term impacts. That IQ thing you mentioned, by the way, just yesterday I saw a new study questioning the whole IQ thing entirely, saying no effect even in long-term heavy users on IQ. So a lot of this is really sort of marginal stuff in the first place that we're talking about. But, if you want to know what the impact would be, I say go to Holland, go to the Netherlands, where any adult can walk into the store and buy marijuana. They seem just as healthy there as we are here. Actually, they're healthier, I think, by World Health Statistics standards.
I'm actually going to take slight issue with Dale here. I've done a lot of research on the Dutch, and it is true that you don't see higher rates of some of these health problems in the Netherlands, but that's partly because you don't see higher levels of marijuana use in the Netherlands. It's simply not the case that Dutch are using more marijuana, so you wouldn't really expect to see more health problems. The IQ data, I think, are a little shaky, and it's just based on a few studies. I'm a little more concerned about the links to schizophrenia. I don't think there's really plausible evidence that marijuana can cause schizophrenia, but I think it's quite plausible that someone at high risk for schizophrenia already could be placed at greater risk by heavy marijuana use. So a lot, a lot's going to depend on how much we see an increase in use. If marijuana use doubles, that will still put us within historical experience because we're still well below the peak marijuana use in 1978, 1979. But if marijuana use were under a more extreme scenario to quadruple, then I think we probably would see health-related consequences. It's interesting in the Netherlands that among people who do use heavy marijuana, the rate of seeking out treatment is surprisingly high, and they're not being sent by the police. They're being sent, I think, by the problems they're encountering with heavy use. So when Beau talked earlier about high THC content, I think one of the problems we're seeing is that people are using so much more potent marijuana than they used to. Some users get into trouble with that. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Dr. Kilmer, did you have any thoughts on that question?
I mean, if someone is really, if you really care about how marijuana legalization is going to influence overall public health, then you really care about how marijuana legalization is going to influence alcohol consumption. We know that there are heavy marijuana users that have problems that cause problems to them and themselves, and so there are some social costs associated with heavy marijuana use for some individuals. But we know that those social costs pale in comparison to what we know about the social costs associated with heavy alcohol use because of its impact on traffic fatalities, violence, and also chronic disease. So if marijuana is legalized and use does increase, the big question is well, what's going to happen to alcohol? Are people just going to substitute away from using alcohol and just be more likely to use marijuana? Or are they going to be more likely to use them in conjunction? And right now, we just don't have really good information about that. I mean, there have only been a few good studies that have been done here in the U.S., and the results are ambiguous. But even if we didn't have, or I mean, even if we did have a consensus, it's still not entirely clear that that would be applicable kind of post-legalization. But if you see this increase in marijuana use and you see a big offset or even a small offset in heavy alcohol use, that may actually lead to a net benefit for society. So for those that really do care about the public health impact, you're going to want to pay close attention to what actually happens in Colorado and Washington, not only paying attention to what happens to marijuana use and marijuana patterns, but also what happens to alcohol, because I think that's the piece that you really need to focus on.
Interesting, the dynamic between those two, and assuming it's the same user who would toggle or, you know, choose one or the other. I'm going to have to ask us now to just move towards closing thoughts because we only have about 3 minutes left. So I know, Dale, you're ready at the mic, so maybe you could start with us just with some, you know, as you look towards the future for marijuana regulation and legalization in California, what do you think is next?
Well, you know, we're holding a big conference about that, January 26th and 27th at Fort Mason. This is the 100th anniversary of cannabis prohibition here in California. It's been illegal for 100 years. It was made illegal not because there was any cannabis problem 100 years ago. There wasn't. Hardly anyone used it. It was made illegal by the Board of Pharmacy on the theory that maybe it might become a problem in the future and this would prevent the problem. So the entirety of the modern so-called marijuana problem has happened after the laws that were meant to prevent it. But for people interested in this issue, I encourage you to check out our conference, and you can do so at our website, canormal.org. That's canorml.org.
Great, and I will put that website on our KLW page when the show is over. Dr. Kilmer, would you like to go next? Any closing thoughts when you look towards the future?
Yeah, you know, I would not be surprised to see legalization on the ballot in a number of states in 2014 and 2016. But I think a lot's going to depend on how the federal government responds to Washington and Colorado and the signal it sends to those states as well as the others. I think there are a couple different debates going on now. I mean, there is a debate about whether or not marijuana should be legalized. But there's also a discussion to be had about, well, given that a state has legalized it, how should marijuana be regulated? What types of labels should you use? How should it be licensed? What types of taxes should be applied? And so I think that there are now some very serious conversations going on right now in Colorado and Washington, where you now have decision makers that are kind of struggling trying to figure this out. So regardless of how you feel about it, there are public officials right now that are trying to figure this out.
Okay.
I think it's going to be important for, you know, researchers and others to, you know, really begin thinking about these issues.
Great. Thank you so much. Dr. McCoon, do you have a very fast closing thought?
Very fast closing thought. No matter what your opinion is on the issue, I hope the federal government will let 1,000 flowers bloom and and let the states experiment a bit. We've been having this debate for decades, and we're going to learn something from these state experiments, and I think we'll have a better understanding of what works and what doesn't after this.
Thank you so much. Thank you to all of you for being on City Visions Radio tonight. Our guests tonight were Dr. Robert McCoon, who we just heard from. He's a professor of law and public policy at UC Berkeley, Dr. Beau Kilmer of the RAND Institute, and Dale Gehringer of Cal Normal. Our engineer tonight was Eric Jansen. Our producer in the studio tonight was Wendy Holcomb. Thank you, Wendy. If you have any other comments or questions about our show, you can still send us email to feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And we will be off the air next week, or we'll have a rebroadcast next week in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, and we'll be back with a live show again on January 28th. Thank you for your listening.